This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Lockwood. Admission is free. Cynthia McKinney will speak immediately after the film. Again, that's Saturday, 7:30 p.m. at the Institute of Culture, corner of Lockwood and Telephone. Join us there and keep listening to KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And this evening, at first we have, we have a special guest, and I'll tell you about that momentarily. And then we have News Wrap coming up from This Way Out, and then at 9:40, a coming-out support group, new transgender support group, and Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We'll have a guest from the Montrose Counseling Center on to talk about those programs. At the top of our second hour at 10 o'clock, Galveston Island celebrates its third annual Pride Festival this weekend at Sengerfest Park. The park is located at 23rd and Strand Streets. Houston Chronicle music columnist Joey Guerrera, Houston Pride idol A.J. Cabrera, and outsinger Jay Arsenault will discuss the events this weekend in Galveston. And then at 10:22 p.m., the Houston Pride Band opens their fall season with P-Opera. It's spelled small p and then opera, exclamation mark. It's a pops concert to showcase popular music with an operatic theme, space opera, classic opera, and a night of the theater, with musical selections from Star Wars, Phantom of the Opera, Carmen, and Wicked, among others. Rudy Martinez will join us to discuss that concert, which is upcoming this weekend. And then at 10:40, we have our usual feature segments from This Way Out. But first, we're going to have a little bit of discussion, followed by Melissa Noriega, the wife of State Senator Rick Noriega, and her unique story.
But we have a little bit of an announcement that Ray Hill, is Ray on? Ray Hill. Good evening, Ray.
Ray's here. The trouble with keeping up with gay, lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual history in Houston is that nobody actually writes most of it down. But we had a significant loss to the community today. This afternoon, Jim Kuhn died. And Jim Kuhn was a local attorney. He lived in the Montrose all of his adult life. He got a bar card and went to practicing law. And we ran into a crisis when Stephen Little was fired from Randall's. It was a butcher there, and he took a vacation day to take a friend of his from Oklahoma to get an HIV test, and just the mention of HIV got him fired. And so there was no existing precedent law.
Well, we lost him.
People with AIDS. And at the time, Stephen didn't have AIDS. He was just fired for mentioning AIDS. And so I couldn't find a lawyer to take it. Finally got Jim Kuhn to take it. And he was very uncertain about it, but he filed all the papers. And lo and behold, as soon as the judge got the case, the judge says there are no laws to protect gay people or anybody about AIDS. And so the judge threw it out. Well, Jim was very dejected by that and thought it had something to do with his ability, which it didn't, but he filed an appeal to the judge's dismissal, and that went to the District Court of Appeals, and a friendly judge, Ben Levy, managed to get on the panel and wrote such a persuasive opinion that he was joined by the other two judges, so it was a 3-0 in favor of Stephen Little. It was a hallmark and a pioneering case for gay and lesbian legal history And Jim's gone, and only a handful of us remember that case. But I want to remember him on this show tonight.
Is there any services or any memorial?
There no doubt will be. Jim had family, and he... So they are the ones who make the arrangement. And Jim had been living on Lawyers Bar Association disability for a while. So there's resources, FAR services. The announcement has not yet been made.
Okay, Ray. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jack. Y'all have a good evening.
And this is Jennifer Renee. I have on the phone, we have our guest tonight is Melissa Noriega. And Melissa is one of my favorite people. She is currently Houston City Council at Large Position 3. But prior to that, she had 27 years veteran of the Houston Independent School District. Community activist, was representative for District 145 in the Texas House in 2005, where she was awarded Freshman of the Year awards by her by the Democratic Caucus, the first Joe Marino Public Service Award by her colleagues. She served on the Defense Affairs, State and Federal Relations Committee, Homeland Security, Corrections Committee. Boy, you are great. Let's see. You were born in Philadelphia and moved to Houston as quick as she could. Graduated from Scarborough High School, which is the Houston HISD, of course. And her father is a lifelong educator. Melissa, how are you this evening?
Hi, Jennifer. I'm just great, and I'm really delighted to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Couple of things I wanted to know. We've got an opportunity. Congratulations that you don't have an opponent in the upcoming election. You must be doing something right since no one wanted to run against you.
I'm very grateful for that. You know, the only ways you run are unopposed or scared, so it's nice to not be terrified.
I understand. And let's see, this is you've been serving how many years now?
Well, I'm running for my second term, but I was elected in a special election, so I got a few months head start on my colleagues. There was an at-large seat that was vacant, and I ran in a May election, had a runoff in 2007, then ran again in November. So I had three elections in 6 months, so I guess the universe decided I deserved a bye this time. I'm very grateful.
You needed a little relaxation for this one. Well, this gives you the opportunity to look at the city and the management of the city as far as the council is concerned from a different perspective. You get to look at it during this period when most everyone else is having to look at their races and the political climate. You get to look at it from a different perspective. So what do you see in our city that needs the work?
Well, you know, it's interesting. As a community, we've dodged some of the bullets of the economic downturn. My fear is that we're going to have a few years of tough times, but I don't think they're going to be anything like, you know, other parts of the country. I know in Arizona, they're talking about selling the state capitol and leasing it back to have their sessions, which I find fairly disturbing. I think some other parts of the country are in real trouble, and I think we're going to be tight. I think whoever's going to be the new mayor and the new administration are going to have to grapple with tough issues. And they're going to be financial, but I don't think it's going to be anything like some of the other parts of the country. And for that, you know, I think all of us need to be grateful.
Well, in the past, I remember the 80s when the rest of the country was actually seemed like that everyone was moving to Texas because of the economic downturn during that period of the mid-80s. But the fact is that we weathered it again. That had to do with real estate. And here we are again still suffering with real estate problems.
Yes, it's interesting. The bubble seems to always be about, you know, the whole loan process. I think we probably need some financial regulation that we don't have, but that's not my lane as part of the city, and it's probably above my pay grade. I think there are a lot of things the federal government needs to deal with, and that's just one of them. You mentioned the city. I'm the chair of public safety, and a lot of the time my energy and time is taken up dealing with the police, the fire, and the homeland security issues, which means the disaster response and that kind of thing. You know, everybody watches what Houston does during a hurricane, and we've had plenty of opportunities of practice. But most of the time it's fire and police, which is about two-thirds of the city budget. We've had a lot of things going on in both those areas. We've really had an opportunity to make some real strides with the police. We've been trying to put more officers on the street. It's an interesting problem. You know, you can put money into police, but until you get more officers, you're struggling a little bit. We've had a lot of overtime that we've used to increase patrols, but there's kind of a finite edge to that. You can't just wear everybody out. You get the policeman worn down to a nub with overtime. So we've been moving officers to the streets. They talk about efficiencies when folks are running for office. They say, well, we're going to go in and we're going to find efficiencies, or we're going to figure out ways to save money. And we've actually been doing that with the police department. We've found the positions where we could have a civilian take the job instead. And so what we've done is move those officers back onto the streets and come behind anytime we're able to find a job that someone who's not a certified peace officer could do the job. there's some kinds of administrative jobs where you probably have a choice. And so it's enabled us to get more than 300 officers onto the streets, which has really made a difference. That's enough that you can tell.
Well, but, you know, even so, and I know that that's been one of the hallmarks. It seems like every person running for office says that they're going to, you know, make a dent in that. But yet there's been a lot of work already done. How much more work can be done as far as efficiency is concerned without having more police officers?
We really need more officers. Each police cadet class brings in, anywhere from 50 to 75 new folks. The last couple classes have been somewhere around 75. And one of the concerns isn't just having enough officers on the street. One of the concerns is that we have a force that's getting older, and there's a point where we're going to start to have another round of retirements. And when that happens, we need to have come behind and gotten ready for that with trained officers. You can't just grab them from somewhere. They go through a fairly elaborate academy process. And we like finding ex-military or folks from other forces, bring them in and we do that with the fire department, too. We have an abbreviated academy for the fire department if they're from another force. But once you start getting a lot of retirements, we're going to be in trouble if we aren't ready for those with new academy classes. I think we're going to have to step up our effort to get federal funds. You know, Houston has been prosperous, and we probably haven't done as much to go get grants and federal funds as there are such things available. So we need to probably work a little harder on that. That's a place where you can use funds to increase your capacity, and I think we're going to need to do that.
Well, it seems to me that's right on target, because as I understand it, Houston is not unique in not having enough police officers. It seems that the statistics show that in many cities that there's just short the number of people. I know that in a conversation with the new sheriff we had on this program several months ago, was his concern that the population of the county is almost equal to the population of the city, and he has less officers than the city does.
I think all of us are competing with the military. Most entities, universities, medical centers, school districts all have a police force. There are a lot of different groups. The Border Patrol has been beefing up. For a while the Guard had signing bonuses. I don't know what their current status is, but we have a volunteer force fighting in two theaters overseas. And so you're competing for the same pool of folks. And some of those young men and women come back trained and they join the force after some time on active duty. But I think as the economy becomes more difficult, that may help us. But we've got to have the money then to have the cadet classes. So you've kind of got a circle. There's another issue with Houston that's a little different. A lot of our larger cities, Chicago, New York, they have an enormous population, but their physical footprint is much smaller based on their population. Houston not only has a lot of people, but we have a very large footprint. We sprawl all over the place. So you physically have to move around. So you need enough officers. You know, if you put officers out in Clear Lake and out in Kingwood, or way out on the west side or wherever, you know, they can't get somewhere else quickly. So you've got to deal with geographic apportionment as well as you know, people to police officer ratios.
Well, it was very nice to have seen, and of course, this is something that's been going on for a while, the neighborhood substations. To know that, you know, very nearby there's at least some police officers manning a station so that, you know, you're not having to call from a central location. But I understand that even those stations need more people in them.
Yes, they do. Now, we're trying to use technology to maximize what we have. We have something now called a real-time crime center, and it's like a huge war room with a lot of different information coming in. Our officers have computers in their patrol cars, you know, and then we have calls coming in on things that are going on. Even convenience stores with the convenience store ordinance, you know, we've sort of taught folks out there to let us know. And so as crimes occur or as there are incidents or hot spots, that comes into the real-time crime center. And then we have, you know, weather reports. We have traffic. You know, we know where our patrols are and what's going on, and we're using that to be more nimble and to move the officers that we have around. You know, we've got kids out there texting and doing all the things that they're doing, and some of those folks aren't doing good things, and so we need to fight technology with technology, and we're doing that.
Well, I know. I think I saw that on a TV program one time, the command center. Mm-hmm. The question I had was concerning that also is the fact that I was assaulted and robbed a couple of years ago, and I was very disheartened when I was told by the officer in charge who interviewed that the chances of ever catching the person that did it was pretty slim, that they had... didn't have the resources to even investigate some of the property crimes.
That's an example of I don't know what happened in your particular situation, but I don't know that we're in exactly the same spot. As I said, we've put 300 plus officers on the street. We've beefed up several academy classes. We had a signing bonus for a while, so we're in better shape probably than when you had a problem. And I'm sorry that you did. But having said that, you know, trying to make good decisions about where to put your resources is always challenging. And, you know, our first priority is to keep people safe, and then you have to come behind and investigate. And things that are going on, you know, we've been improving the crime lab. We have a new property room where we've got better evidence handling. And so there's a lot that's gone on that I think you would be impressed with that has been a response to some of that kind of thing. So I think things are much improved. I think that a lot has happened over Mayor White's administration, and I think he's made public safety a particular emphasis, and I'm proud to have been part of that. I think probably any council person or you know, person involved, you know, we all have a piece of it. We don't do it ourselves.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's like the military or anything else. The guys in blue, the women in blue, they're the ones on the front line that really do the work. But trying to figure out how to allocate resources and improve communication and, you know, have enough folks trained and recruited, you know, as we start to have retirements is part of the public policy challenge, and I think we've been rising to meet that.
All right. We're speaking with Melissa Noriega, city council member from at large, position 3. Well, following along on that, you mentioned the crime lab. Now, I'd heard some conversation that there was a discussion about the county and the city combining for a regional crime lab. Was that just conversation, or is there something really going on there?
Well, I think that's going on. I think that there are negotiations going on between the mayor and the county judge and the different and the district attorney. There are several issues with that. There are chunks of the community that that want to see the crime lab have the capacity to prosecute crimes. But there are also chunks of the community that want to see an entity that's independent of both the police and the prosecutor. And, you know, those are all valid points. You know, you want the truth. You want justice that comes from accurate evidence. And so having a state-of-the-art facility is what we really need, and that's going to take resources. I think combining the resources of the city and the county is really going to be the way to do that. I think that it's going to take us a while to get there, and we're working on it now. But some of it is, you know, if you can get things in the same place, some of it happens as part of it. It's interesting, too, but there are changes in the technology, again, here in this area. There are robots now to do DNA, or you increase the capacity of certified personnel because they can use a robot to do, you know, many more samples. They can do them faster. They can process them with less error. And they're revolutionizing the whole idea of DNA processing. But yeah, a small robot is like $50,000, and the bigger ones are much more than that. And so we've been adding them gradually and looking at doing that. It really is going to make a change, but all of this takes resources.
Well, with the limited resources of the city and the county, if y'all pooled it together, it seemed that would be a more efficient way of handling the lab work.
I think we're moving toward that in a lot of the criminal justice parts of things. You know, we already have, you know, a lot of the prosecution go on at the county level. You know, the city police arrest folks. You know, there's already collaboration. I think that is just an obvious place to go, and we're going there. I think different parts of it are going to happen at different speeds. And it's important to remember how many pieces there are. You've got the ME at the county level. You have ballistics testing. That one of the things that Houston is award-winning in. We do a great job with the firearms testing. You know, we do trace stuff. We do all kinds of things. And different people have pieces they're better at. And I think the key is going to be to combine these and let the best people do the best job and figure out how to get some synergy out of things.
Because I know that if you read the reports and projections, you know, we're going to double the size of our city as far as population over the next 20 years.
You know, isn't that amazing?
I mean, we have to literally build another Houston within 20 years.
I think that's right. And it's interesting. I might use that to segue into another issue.
Something please
do. Public safety is about being able to get around too, and that, you know, you end up having the issue of flooding and drainage and wastewater and those kinds of things. You know, with the city, the 2/3 of the budget is
fire and police,
fire,
yeah,
and security. But then you have water in and water out, and we pick up your trash, and then most of the rest of it's gravy. You know, you have parks and you have other things, but an awful lot of it is trash and turning on your faucet in the morning and hoping that you can brush your teeth. And we were all reminded of that last year during Ike, you know.
Oh, yes.
But what to do about drainage and flooding is becoming more and more of a challenge. Every time we pour concrete, every time we pour a driveway or a parking lot, we change the dynamics of what's going on above and below the ground. And there's a lot more science available to figure out how to do that, but we're going to need the resources to take care of that. I would predict if we're going to look at any kind of dedicated funding for something, you know, folks go crazy and don't want to talk about taxes or fees, but I think we're going to have to talk about something when it comes to drainage.
Well, I know that as what I do in my day job, permitting and all for new projects, it is now required and has been for some time, but the requirement that whenever you have a new project or an expansion of existing project, you have to have an evaluation and review on drainage.
Yes, and where's
the water going to go?
That's right, and you have to do some kind of either mitigation or detention or...
A remediation of the water itself,
that's right.
Yes.
You know, as you drive around, you notice now these big sort of areas that people have dug out near freeway interchanges, you know, or apartment complexes. Some of the new subdivisions have these wonderful fountains. What those really are retention ponds.
Yes.
And you don't think about it. I was with my folks somewhere in Dallas. I said, wait, stop the car. I jumped out. I had to go look at how they'd done some really elaborate thing with riprap and this drainage thing under a shopping center, and I had to go look at it. My father thought I'd lost my mind.
Well, and two, I've seen some of the new technology of this, and we think that, just like you were saying, we have this big retention pond, which is, quote-unquote, a waste of land area. But there's a lot that's done underground using concrete pipes and the like, and then covering it over with dirt. But that's where it's retained. It's retained below ground.
I know that it's been a struggle. You know, Kirby's been under construction for months. But my son goes to school off of Kirby at the Rye School. And I remember a few months ago it was pouring. It was one of those dreadful... gully washers, and I threw him in the car and drove him to school instead of putting him on the bus, and it was flooding everywhere, and I came up Kirby, and Kirby wasn't flooding, and that's because there are these huge, huge box culvert things, or whatever they are.
That's what they are.
They're as big as houses.
Oh, yes.
Under the street. It's a pipe that's taking the water away like a river underground. I think we're going to have to do more of that, and I think we're going to have to tackle it, and we may need to come up with a funding mechanism to do it. I think one of the problems people have is that we're not always honest about that, and so I think we ought to call it what it is, which is probably some kind of a rain tax. But I also think if we plan a project and we do some kind of massive project to address it, we could have a beginning and an end. You know, we could have it time out or have a certain lifespan, and then it ends, rather than have something and add something and add something again later. Everybody knows that we're having a harder and harder time moving around when it really, really rains. And we're going to have to do something about that. Yeah. Fortune 500 companies, folks from other parts of the country, you know, aren't going to come here if they can't move their employees around. And it's not safe, you know, separate from everything else. It's just not safe.
And to segue into, what about mass transit, getting people around?
You know, it's interesting. I listen to people talk about commuter rail and, you know, light rail in the city. I don't understand why there's even any discussion. We need all of it.
Oh, yeah. We need it all, and we need it yesterday.
Yes. And I think Texas is going to have to do some high-speed rail. You know, we have a lot of folks here that have ended up here permanently from New Orleans, and they were folks that came here on a bus, and they've ended up staying here, and they don't have a good way to get back and forth. What a difference it would make if there was a train between Houston and New Orleans. You know, with Dallas and Austin and Fort Worth and Houston.
Oh, yeah, the old Sunset Limited ran between,
Galveston. You know, we're just going to have to do that. It's much more efficient. It's much more environmentally friendly. And I just think that that's where we're headed. And if you do that, you need the commuter rail and the moving around the city to work together. I am not sure that we have the whole light rail thing exactly right, but I think we've made a good start, and I think we need to supplement it with excellent bus routes and you know, all of it needs to work together. And I think the best way for that is there to be good communication between the community and Metro, and I think Metro probably needs to work on that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Melissa. Would you like to say hello to your dad?
I told Jennifer that you listened to her show. So hey, Dad, I'll give you a shout-out.
Anything we've missed?
Well, there's I could talk about city stuff a long time, but we can always have
you come back.
It's not as exciting as some other things, but it sure is important. When you get out of bed in the morning, the first thing you do is run to the bathroom, and every bit of that's the city.
All right.
And so we appreciate the folks in Houston and the way that they support us as we try to take care of the people's business. But we have an election coming up, and it's pretty important.
Thank you, Melissa. We have been talking to Melissa Noriega, City Council Member at Large Position 3. And thank you very much. This is Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 17, 2009. Ugandan Member of Parliament David Bahati of the ruling National Resistance Movement proposed a private member's bill this week to create a new crime of aggravated homosexuality. Under the Anti-Homosexuality Bill 2009, anyone convicted of having gay sex with a disabled person or with someone under the age of 18 or who has gay sex despite being HIV positive would face the death penalty. The bill also criminalizes the promotion of homosexuality, aiding and abetting homosexuality, or maintaining a house for purposes of homosexuality. Bahati said his bill would protect children and the traditional family. Consensual adult same-gender sex is already outlawed in the country, and Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has rivaled Zimbabwe's notoriously homophobic Robert Mugabe in his inflammatory anti-gay rhetoric. A handful of openly LGBT activists in Uganda already endure routine harassment and arrest by government authorities, even though it's not yet illegal to simply be out there. 17 human rights groups around the world strongly criticized the legislation. Amnesty International called the proposals immoral, and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission said this inflammatory bill will be taken as further confirmation that it is okay to attack or even kill people perceived to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. Despite international protests, local observers say the bill has the ruling party's strong support and is very likely to pass.
Jamaican Prime Minister Bruce Golding opened parliamentary debate this week on a proposed Charter of Fundamental Rights by reiterating his strong opposition to including legal rights for same-gender couples. The constitutional changes are designed to define specific rights and freedoms for all Jamaicans. I make no apology in saying decisively and emphatically that the government of Jamaica remains irrevocably opposed to the recognition, legitimization, or acceptance of same-sex marriages or same-sex unions, he said, not as long as I sit here. He acknowledged to Parliament that his position could further what he called aggressive efforts by some gay rights groups to discourage tourists from traveling to the Caribbean island nation or purchasing products made there. But Golding said, "We remain steadfast in our determination that the values and culture must be protected and preserved."
Jamaican reggae star Buju Banton, whose most infamous song, Boom Bye Bye, calls for the brutal murder of gay people, met this week with a few San Francisco government officials and LGBT activists. Other than being the first time Banton has ever met with LGBT people, arranged by his promoters prior to his controversial performance in the Bay Area later that night, the meeting apparently accomplished very little. He was reportedly asked to take meaningful steps to build bridges with LGBT community members and even to donate royalties from Boom Bye Bye to his country's major LGBT rights group, JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays. Promoter Jonathan Mack told the Bay Area Reporter LGBT newspaper that Banton no longer performs Boom Bye Bye, which he said Banton wrote almost 20 years ago when he was just 19 years old. But LGBT activists said that Banton performed the song as recently as 2007 in Jamaica and noted that it's still widely available on YouTube. In one of the videos, they claim Banton yells, "There is no end to the war between me and faggots." Banton reportedly repeated that statement when he called a Jamaican radio talk show this week. He said he would not surrender to LGBT demands because that would contradict his religion and culture. "I owed him nothing," the Jamaican Observer quoted him as saying, "and they don't owe I nothing." Several international rights groups have encouraged a boycott of Banton and other reggae performers whose lyrics promote violence against gay people. At least 16 concerts in Banton's current U.S. tour have been canceled following local protests.
But the BBC reported this week that a group of well-known Russian singers and writers are calling for an end to discrimination against gays and lesbians. They met after a local official tried to close Moscow's longest-running gay club, Dusha Itello, where many of the artists have performed. Activist Nikolai Alexeyev, who coordinated the meeting, said it was the first time celebrities had come together publicly to denounce homophobia. Pop star Lolita told reporters that anti-gay discrimination was in breach of the Russian Constitution and that, "We think that this is a return to fascism." Consensual adult same-gender sex was decriminalized in Russia in 1993, and homosexuality was removed from the official list of mental illnesses in 1999. However, there are no laws against discrimination or harassment based on sexual orientation or gender identity, and same-gender relationships are not officially recognized.
Elsewhere, the White House issued a statement this week regarding President Barack Obama's position on anti-gay voter referenda in two U.S. states. It came in response to an inquiry from The Advocate, the country's major LGBT news magazine. The president has long opposed divisive and discriminatory efforts to deny rights and benefits to same-sex couples, the statement read. And as he said at the Human Rights Campaign dinner, he believes strongly in stopping laws designed to take rights away. Maine's Question 1 would overturn a law that legalized same-gender marriage earlier this year. Washington's Referendum 71 asks voters to reconfirm an everything-but-marriage expansion of existing domestic partnership rights for same-gender couples and some senior couples. Voters in both states will decide each measure on November 3rd. An initiative to repeal an LGBT anti-discrimination ordinance is also on the ballot in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
A bill that would allow lesbian and gay couples to marry in Washington, D.C., has been introduced by Councilman David Catania, one of two openly gay council members. He said he hopes for a vote in December. It's almost certain to pass, but Congress gets an opportunity to review D.C. legislation before it takes effect. Still, even opponents in Congress have acknowledged that the bill will likely become law. The city began in July to recognize same-gender marriages legally performed elsewhere. Congress didn't even consider overturning that law. Religious opponents of marriage equality in the nation's capital, led by the pastor of a Maryland church, Bishop Harry Jackson, vowed to take all possible legal action to overturn the legislation if it passes.
A federal judge in San Francisco this week ruled that a high-profile lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8, which stripped gay and lesbian couples of the right to marry last November, will go to trial in January as originally scheduled. Arguing that the lawsuit should be dismissed, Chuck Cooper, the attorney for Prop 8 proponents, said that only 5 states and 7 countries worldwide had legalized same-gender marriage. But U.S. District Chief Judge Vaughn Walker asked, "How does same-sex marriage adversely affect opposite-sex marriage?" "My answer is, I don't know," Cooper surprisingly admitted. But he said that the state has a right to stand back and see how it plays out in other jurisdictions, such as Massachusetts, and not engage in a radical experiment. Most observers agree that marriage equality, legal for 5 years now in the Bay State, has been economically beneficial and had no adverse impact. Massachusetts, in fact, has the lowest divorce rate in the country.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger this week signed a bill to make gay icon Harvey Milk's May 22nd birthday an annual day of significance across the state. Under right-wing pressure that was also exerted this year, Schwarzenegger vetoed a previous measure. But that was before the Oscar-winning movie Milk, President Barack Obama's posthumous award of the Presidential Medal of Freedom to the slain San Francisco supervisor, and Milk's induction into the California Hall of Fame. According to Equality California, the bill requires the governor to proclaim May 22nd each year as Harvey Milk Day. It encourages public schools and educational institutions to conduct suitable commemorative exercises on that date. The governor also signed bills to expand services to LGBT survivors of domestic violence and to recognize legal same-gender marriages performed outside California. Under current law, however, they would not be seen as marriages, but would be recognized under the state's existing domestic partnership laws.
And finally, in a speech at Brigham Young University, Idaho this week, a leader in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Dallin H. Oaks, suggested that Mormons are facing the same type of intimidation over their support for California's Proposition 8 that Southern blacks suffered before passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965. Oaks is a former Utah Supreme Court justice and current member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, a governing body that is second only to the first presidency in the church's hierarchy. Criticizing minor harassment that's been reported against a few LDS Church Prop 8 supporters and what he called alleged civil rights, Oates said the anti-Mormon backlash was an attack on religious freedom, and that it is like the well-known and widely condemned voter intimidation of blacks in the South that produced corrective federal civil rights legislation. His remarks were blasted by LGBT and other civil rights groups. University of Utah historian Colleen McDaniel rhetorically asked the Salt Lake Tribune, were four little Mormon girls blown up in the church at Sunday school? Were there burning crosses planted on local bishops' lawns? Were people lynched and their genitals stuffed in their mouths? Janetta Williams, president of the NAACP's Salt Lake branch, said there is no comparison. I don't see where the LDS Church has been denied any of their rights, she concluded. What the gay and lesbian communities are fighting for, that is a civil rights issue.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 17, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
This is Queer Voices.
In the studio tonight, we have Sally Huffer, who is with the Montrose Counseling Center. And we're going to talk about a couple of different things. And Sally, why don't you just jump right in?
Well, the first thing I wanted to talk about, well, there are three different topics. And I don't even know how much time we have today, but I'm going to try to cover all of them. Also with me is Colt Meyer, who is an intern right now at the Counseling Center. And he is facilitating the transgender support group. So we've got a new transgender support group going on, and he'll be able to talk a little bit about that. We also have the coming out support group is starting up again, which is always great around this time, you know, after National Coming Out Day. So that's always really good this time of year, because heading into the holidays, a lot of people are dealing with coming out issues. And then lastly, I wanted to talk about the month of October. We always know that it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, mm-hmm. but one of the things we don't seem to talk about much is that this is also Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Ooh.
So that was the third thing that I wanted to talk about today, was domestic violence and how it still occurs in our community, and we need to recognize that and talk about it.
Right. Well, let's start with coming out. How has this changed in the past number of years?
Well, I think that one of the things is that in terms of resources, you know, we run the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, which is a crisis hotline at Montrose Counseling Center. And I think over the years you can kind of take a look at the types of calls that we've been getting, many of which are related to coming out issues. But I think with the prevalence of the Internet, now people have a lot more resources to find out information about what it means to be gay, what it means to be lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. And so, at least in terms of phone calls that are coming in, or at least awareness, certainly people are recognizing sexual orientation, gender identity issues at a much earlier age, or at least being able to put words to that and be able to do some research around that. So,
right, but as wonderful as the Internet is, and it is wonderful, it still isn't that personal talking.
Exactly. And the thing that we have to keep in mind is that every individual's coming out story is completely different. I mean, Jack, yours is different from Jennifer's, different from mine, different from Colt's. You know, and we're always dealing with coming out issues. Are we going to tell, you know, I always say, are we going to tell the dentist when they say, hey, how was your weekend? Are you going to say, hey, I just got back from Key West with my partner and we just tore it up, you know? I mean, are you going to say that? You know, so that's a decision that you make to come out.
Or wish you could say that.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, everybody's coming out story is different. A lot of that has to do with what we bring to the table. Some people come, you know, are raised in a very conservative religious household, and so coming out for them may be a whole lot more difficult than somebody that is raised in a, you know, in a less religious or more tolerant, or, you know, which is not to say that even people who are brought up in tolerant households aren't having difficulties. I mean, we talk to kids all the time and they'll say, well, it's okay as long as we don't tell grandma. You know, so, you know, so there's always different stories and different circumstances that everybody brings to the table. The other thing is, you know, where did you grow up? Where do you live? If you're, you know, out in Beaumont, That's completely different than if you're in Houston or living in San Francisco or living in New York or Chicago or, you know, Oklahoma. So, I mean, there's different things that we all bring to the table when we're dealing with
If it's out. Beaumont, you get to Houston as quick as you can.
Amen.
I threw that out there because I know that, that Colt is from Beaumont.
So am I.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so is your boss.
Well, there you go.
See, it's in the water over there in the Golden Triangle.
There's no escaping it.
No.
So, but because everybody has different stories, you know, that's one of the great things about having a coming out support group. And that is because everybody can come and it doesn't matter. You could be at various different stages of coming out. Let's say you're out to your friends or you're out when you're at the bars, but you're not out at work or you're not out with your family, you're not out with your employer. All of these are different, you know, circumstances in which you decide, am I going to come out? You know, or I'm getting ready to tell my family, or I'm getting ready to tell my boss, or I'm getting ready to transition. Any of those things, you know, may be what somebody's dealing with. And all of those things can be incorporated in the coming out support group. And it starts this Thursday, October 22nd. And it's going to meet every Thursday between now and I think mid-December. We're going to skip over Thanksgiving. But it's going to meet at the Counseling Center, which is 401 Brannard Street. Or Bernard, or Brainerd. It's going to be at the Counseling Center and on Thursdays from 6 to 7:30.
But they can find out where it is by how?
Go to the
website?
Yeah, go to our website.
Now, do you have to start at the beginning and go through?
No. The coming out support group, like the transgender support group that we'll talk about in a second, both are free. And you don't have to go to all the different sessions. You can. It's a drop-in group. So, you know, come when you can, and a lot of the topics will be discussed by the members there, and they'll determine, you know, what focus for the evening. So, yeah, there is no charge to attend. You don't have to go to all of them. Pop in, you know, when you can.
Okay, let's transition over to the transgender.
What a segue.
Exactly.
It's built in.
So, it's been running Monday nights since October 5th, and we're having group meetings Monday night for transgender people, regardless of where they are in transition, which way they're going, how they feel about themselves. They don't even have to identify as transsexual. They can identify as genderqueer or a lot of anything in between. Anybody in the gray area in terms of gender is welcome. We meet Monday nights from 6:15 to 8 p.m. We've met three times, and we have nine more left to go.
And you said any which way. Now, why don't you explain that to our audience?
Sure. So the usual two groups that people think of when they are getting a little bit informed about the transgender community are female to males, F to M's, or male to female, M to F's. So F to M's would be people who are technically female-bodied but identify their gender to be male, and the reverse. So M to F's are people whose physical body is considered male but identify their gender to be female.
And as time has progressed, one of the concerns always was about employment. Has that gotten a little bit easier?
I would say I've heard some success stories, but overall, no. What would you say, Jennifer?
No, it has changed in some cases, but since there's nothing in the law that protects a transgender person as there isn't for a sexual orientation, a gay person, then no. It is purely up to the whim of the employer, and we live in Texas.
That's true.
So Montrose Counseling Center does basically support all the GLBT community.
Yes, they're very inclusive of the transgender population.
Now, if somebody wanted information on the transgender support group, where could they find it? At the website?
Yeah, you can go to www.montrosecounselingcenter.org. I know it's a mouthful. And you can find out any information about that in any of our support groups. I mean, we've got the transgender support group. We've got the coming out support group. We've got a deaf and GLBT support group. Of course, we've got other support groups within the anti-violence program. We have other support groups within the HIV counseling program. So, I mean, they can find out information about all of our support groups.
One question is, now, someone, especially a trans person or you know, gay or lesbian, when they come out, they pick up the phone to call about, let's say, the transgender support group, can they call What did they say? They may be terrified of even saying it out loud, but yet they need the support so terribly. I am expressing my own opinion about how I came out. You know, I just didn't want to say it out loud to anybody because I'd never done it before.
Well, one of the things that I want to emphasize about all of the support groups, or even if you're just calling the counseling center, or if you're going to call the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, which let me give out both of those numbers. The
Shirley,
counseling
go
center
ahead.
Number is 713-529-0037. Now, the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard is 713-529-3211. That one of the things that we hold in the highest regard at the Counseling Center is confidentiality. So if you call the Counseling Center, your phone number is blocked. We don't see it. We don't know who you are. So you have, you know, the protection of confidentiality in asking any question that you may have to either the switchboard or the counseling center. And all of these support groups, one of the first things they discuss, you know, as with any 12-step group, and that is, you know, that confidentiality is important, and it's what, you know, what's spoken in the group, what's said in the group, what's discussed in the group, stays in the group. So we want to make sure that anybody that may be afraid or concerned or worried or think that, you know, if you're going to call us, we're going to call you back, and we're going to, even when we call back to somebody, our phone number is blocked, our name is blocked. So that means that your family's not going to see that the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard called you back, and your family's not going to see that a counseling center called you back, or your partner or whomever. So you have complete confidentiality there.
Okay, and I want to clarify something. The Gay and Lesbian Switchboard also accepts transgender calls.
Oh, most definitely, in fact.
But no, don't say it. I answer that because if someone's out there listening and they say, well, that's the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, well, who do I call? You know, and because we'll block ourselves from taking the step we need to save our lives.
Yeah, certainly. So, exactly. Most definitely.
So the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard is really the Gay and Lesbian Transgender Switchboard.
And bisexual.
I was waiting for somebody to throw that in.
Well, that's
the
one
team
of
approach.
Yeah, one of the, you know, few publicly identified bisexuals in the community, I think.
Congratulations.
Speak out about that. Yes, most definitely. And we do get a large number of phone calls from people in the transgender community, and it really does warm my heart that we have training such that somebody who, and I find this, you know, fairly often, that we'll have people who don't fit that female to male or male to female transsexual. We've had a lot of calls from people who identify as cross-dressers, mm-hmm. you know, and they are heterosexual men who are interested in dressing up. We have had calls from intersexed people who want information about, you know, surgery or that kind of thing. And we've had phone calls from parents of intersex, parents of, you know, male to female, parents of female to male. So I'm really pleased that a lot of people know that they can still call, even though, like with, you know, the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, the name itself, you know, we kind of kept that because
it's a legacy name.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it needs to be clear that people know, because don't let that stop you,
yeah.
Because there are people there trained. Yeah. Well, before we need the time to talk about this month and it being domestic violence. Talk
it
about
is domestic
that.
Violence
What's going on?
Well, we oftentimes don't talk about it in our own community, and it does happen, and it happens with the same frequency that it happens in the straight community. And you might wonder what is that? You know, how often? Well, they say that one in four relationships involves domestic violence of some sort. So, I mean, think about four people that you know in a relationship. Now, does that mean that there's physical violence, that somebody's getting beaten up and all of that, and they're hiding their bruises from the world and that sort of thing? Well, one, maybe. But domestic abuse, domestic violence can also take other forms, like emotional abuse, financial abuse, isolating somebody from the rest of, you know, their family, threatening to out somebody to their family, their church, their employer. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that somebody can maintain power and control over their partner. Mm-hmm. And it happens within our community, like I said, one in four. So, I mean, it's extraordinarily high, just in, you know, in general. So we do have to recognize that it's happening in our community. Like I said, there are some ways, like the straight community doesn't have to deal with, I'm gonna tell your parents, or I'm gonna tell your employer that you're gay, or I'm gonna call and harass you at your place of employment 30, 40 times a day to the point where you're gonna be asked to resign. The general population doesn't have to deal with those kinds of threats. They don't have to deal with the threat of, you know, if you leave me, you know, I'm taking the children, you know, that, you know, and you won't be able to see them because you have no rights as a parent. You know, the general population doesn't have to deal with that. I mean, there are protections already built in for parents, and since, you know, people in the GLBT community, okay, there are a few exceptions, are not allowed to get married, so we don't have those protections.
Or divorced.
Exactly.
Apparently.
Right. So, you know, there's that. There's also HIV status. I mean, that's a concern, and certainly that happens in the straight community from time to time. But, I mean, there are times when somebody who may be positive isn't allowed to go to the doctor and get their medication, and their, you know, their partner kind of controls whether or not they're able to do that. And so, and it's really hard because a lot of times it takes a long time for somebody to break free from a relationship in which there's this imbalance of power and control. Let's say this is your first gay or lesbian relationship. You don't have any other experience. You don't know. And if your partner tells you, well, this is what being in a gay relationship is all about, do you know any better? And what if somebody says, well, you know, I'm the first woman that has ever loved you, and nobody else is ever going to love you like I did, or I do. So, or threatening about the, you know, the your pets and that sort of thing. So there's all kinds of ways that, you know, that somebody can try to do that to you, and it's really hard to break free of it.
And if you're in one of these violent relationships, is there sheltering available?
Well, and that's just it. If it is violent, and if you don't feel safe, you can call the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. Again, that number is 713-529-3211. And if you're afraid for your safety because, let's say, your partner's been out drinking, came home, didn't like, you know, the way the dishes were done or the clothes were put away or, you know, something like that, because a lot of times it's nitpicking, and becomes violent, call the switchboard. We can get in touch with an anti-violence advocate. And if you have already been harmed, we can get an advocate that can meet you at the hospital, make sure that you're being treated with dignity and respect. If you need to file a police report, they can be there with you. Because you may think, hey, you know, if I call the police, they're just going to look at my partner, who's much bigger than me, and say, oh, well, you know, or I'm bigger than them. Hey, that small person couldn't beat me up. You know, so at least somebody can be with you and make sure that the police treat you with dignity and respect. They can walk you through the process. They can tell you, this is what a protective order is. This is, you know, what the next step is. If you're ready to leave, let's talk about putting together a safety plan and what all of that entails. So the anti-violence advocate can do that, but they can also get you out of that home that's no longer safe and put you in scattered site shelter. We don't have, like, one building where domestic violence survivors go for shelter. We put them in scattered site, meaning boarding houses, hotel rooms. And that way, if their partner should find out where they're located, we can move them to another place. Mm. So we are able to do that. Now, they do have to be screened because there are certain things that we can't do. We can't place somebody in a hotel room or a boarding house if they're actively using drugs. So we do have to use some screening before we can do that. But shelter is a big problem because if you think about it, if a lesbian were to call a traditional, you know, battered women's shelter and enter the shelter, what's preventing her partner from, you know, calling and saying, hey, I'm being beaten up by, and I'm doing the air quotes, my boyfriend, and claiming that, you know, she also needs shelter. So, you know, they're going to put both of those women in the same facility, the same shelter. And, you know, and where are transgender people going to go? You know, there is no place for...
There's no place for the transgender people.
Yeah, there's no place that they can go and dress, you know. And certainly there's an issue with homelessness, you know, not just with the gay community. There's a problem in the transgender community. We don't have a shelter. I mean, Montrose Counseling Center doesn't have a shelter. There is no shelter right now for homelessness. So yeah, there this can be a real problem. So, but in the case of domestic violence, you know, there is no place really for gay men to go other, you know, than a shelter like this. Yeah, there's emergency, you know, where they might be able to stay for a night or two, but not until they can get back on their feet.
Well, thank you for keeping us up to date on what's going on in the Montrose Counseling Center. And once again, how do we contact you all?
You can go to the website, which is www.montrosecounselingcenter.org, or you can call us at 713-529-0037.
Okay, and you are?
Sally Huffer.
Colt Meyer.
Thank you. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Ever thought of joining the awesome group of volunteers who make KPFT happen? Well, now's your chance. Our Fall Pledge Drive is coming up October 25th to November 11th. The schedule for phone volunteering is flexible, including mornings, evenings, and weekends. All you need is legible handwriting, good hearing, and be friendly on the phone. Sign up for one of our phone volunteer trainings, Tuesday, October 20th, or Wednesday, October 21st, both at 12 noon, or Thursday, October 22nd at 6 p.m. Trainings take place in our studios at 419 Lovett Boulevard. Community nonprofits and college organizations are encouraged to sign up. Your group will be thanked on the air and on our website. Sign up at volunteer@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 316. Join our team at KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio.
What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
And you're listening to a track from an artist that will be appearing in this weekend's Galveston Pride Festival, Jay Arsenault. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much.
This is Brian Lavinka and
Jennifer Day.
And also we have Joey Guerra.
Yes, sir.
Guerra. Who is the famous Houston Guerra. Chronicle music columnist and local celebrity, I would say.
Oh.
So we have Galveston.
Radio personality. Wait, you know.
There you go. We have Galveston Pride coming up this weekend. Why is it this time of year? Everyone's asking me.
It's mostly, I think there are two reasons. Weather's a primary factor because, you know, June, when so many of the other prides, particularly here in Texas, happen, is unbearably hot.
Oh, yeah.
And then also just to sort of do something different. I mean, there's so much stuff going on in the summer that, you know, I think sometimes the fall gets ignored a little bit by our community,
mm-hmm.
just for big events like this. So we thought it was really different and unique, and we're not competing with so many other different things.
Very good. And the weather's perfect. If it's like this weekend, next weekend?
It's supposed to be gorgeous.
That's perfect weather. So tell us about what's going to go on at this festival and what can people expect.
The festival, which is actually Saturday, kicks off at noon, runs till about 8 p.m. Our headliner is Tiffany.
Oh, my gosh.
The 80s icon.
The eternal diva, I would say.
Yes. The teen queen. Playboy centerfold and all that.
I didn't see that one.
I didn't either, but we're very excited we have her. She does pride events all year, and she hasn't been to Texas probably in 15 years to do a show, so we're really excited to have her.
Very good.
Derek Barry, who did Britney Spears on America's Got Talent, who has made a career of impersonating Britney Spears.
I mean, who doesn't remember that?
Right. And he's been doing his shows in Mexico City and Vegas. He just was in Rome, so we're having him here to do that.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
That's a coup.
Well, yeah.
The whole weekend starts on Friday?
Is the big kickoff party at Third Coast Beach Bar.
Okay.
And that starts at 5 p.m. We're going to have appearances by all the performers, including Jay. Katie Malloy from American Idol, who I think is going to perform a song that night at the bar and is also performing the next day at Galveston Pride.
Mm-hmm.
The festival runs noon to 8, and then we have a post-party at the Pink Dolphin right after the festival.
Very good. Now, everything is free.
Everything is free.
So, perfect weekend, free events. Why not go to Galveston for Pride and support our little sister city?
Yes, we're really excited. That's why we wanted to sort of mix the lineup with. We have some other local Galveston performers that are going to be performing earlier in the day. CeCe Ryder, Misty Valdez, mm-hmm. they're going to be doing numbers during the day. Jay is from Houston, obviously. Katie Malloy is from Katie here in Texas. Katie from Katie.
Crazy.
And then Derek and Tiffany, obviously, we're bringing in from other areas.
Now, I was reading somewhere that you're going to have a special RuPaul guest performer. Is that true?
RuPaul.
Let's see. RuPaul Drag Race. Jade.
Oh, no. That's actually not part of our event.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Well, I'm reading from the twit. And,
yes.
On the cover is our guest tonight. And Jay, tell us how did you?
I love the blue hair.
Yeah, thank we you. Have to describe. Can you do a color commentary?
Color analysis.
it's blue and spiky.
Yeah.
So Jay, how long have you been singing, and how did you get into the business? And
I've been singing since I was a kid. So about 6 or 7 years old, just doing school choir stuff, church choir stuff, plays at school, musical theater. For college, I was a vocal performance major and did most of the classical musical theater stuff, but my heart was really more in rock pop, so I decided to kind of take a departure from that, and about 5 years ago, really put my best foot forward with trying to get my songwriting career off the ground, and I've thankfully met a lot of great people along the way who have been able to help me, and I've gotten to the point that I'm at right now. I'm still pushing forward.
And that song that we were listening to before the interview was called Shine.
Yes.
Tell us about that song.
Well, Shine, that song was actually one of the last songs that we wrote on the record. The album came out in March, earlier this year. And I really just wanted to focus on writing a song that was really positive, really upbeat, and really that everybody could identify with, and was just a really feel-good song. So I figured what better description of that kind of feeling than Shine. So
absolutely, and it's a very happy song.
Yeah.
Now, you're performing Saturday at the festival?
Yes.
Okay, about Saturday what time? Afternoon. Like, people want to hear you.
Jay will probably go on around 3. We're still finalizing the final times because we've added a lot of stuff. But
So get there early and stay late.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And when we get there, where will we be?
Oh, that's a great question, Jay.
Great question. You are
other than on the island. It's a fairly big island.
Just follow
our community to wherever
the Cologne Trail
is.
You're going to be at Sangerfest Park, which is at 23rd and Strand.
I was wondering how to say that.
It's in the Strand. A lot of the businesses there are participating. We're going to have vendor booths set up. You know, the performances are going to be going on all day, DJ music in between. So it's just going to be a big party and family friendly. That's very important.
So if you want to hang out down in Galveston at the Strand anyway, come on down around noon and until 8 o'clock at night and enjoy the festival, Pride Festival.
Yes.
That's excellent. Okay.
So, Joey,
because I was worried that some people may be listening to us and say, oh, Galveston, where is it? And you've named a couple of locations. Now, I happen to know where they are, but there may be people out there that don't know.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now, Joey, they brought you on to kind of beef up the lineup and the musical portion of the festival.
Yes, yes. I was really excited to work with Angela Snell and Laura Villagran, who were putting this together. I met them through Pride Idol here in Houston. They were one of the sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Pride Idol. I sort of took it a little bit upon myself to really beef that event up. And we did, and it was a big success. And we were really happy with it. They were happy with it. And they contacted me and said, hey, we want to make this bigger, better. We want to take it over the edge. And the first thing I said was, you have to get somebody to headline that's going to draw attention. And there you go. Tiffany was...
I think we're alone now.
Yes. Hopefully we won't be alone on the island, though.
No.
But she's great. I've actually seen her in concert. I saw her at L.A. Pride, and she's fantastic.
Wow. A star at L.A. Pride, now in Galveston.
Yes. So it's pretty exciting. And I've seen Jay perform, and Jay's really cool. Jay has a great voice.
Now, Jay, what are you going to wear?
Well, hopefully, if the weather's nice enough, probably jeans and my usual...
You gotta be a rock star,
rock
though.
Attire, I suppose.
Yeah. Tattered jeans and your leather jacket. And
yeah, pretty much. Jay, well, maybe not leather, I don't know.
Jay works the rock star look very well.
Yeah, you do. Well, and as I referred to earlier, the cover of Twit has our own guest on the cover.
So if you want to see what he really looks like, this handsome devil here, you can go to the Twit.
You know, I was thinking he's giving us kind of a America's Next Top Model pose and kind of just giving us that come hither look.
He's smizing, smiling with his eyes.
Yes, and so we have also smizing. Local talent.
The picture on the Twit does not have the blue hair.
Oh.
So you you can't see it. It is exciting. If for no other reason, you need to come see it.
And I was going to say that also appearing at the festival is local sensation and Outsmart winner, Toddicus.
Yes, sir. Todd is from Guava Lamp, and he's going to bring his very unique energy, along with Ernie Manous, who just won 3 Emmys.
I saw that, and he won Outsmart. So we have multiple Outsmart winners and local talent and music and just good weather. I think the other thing that we need to mention is that Galveston is also recovering from Ike.
Really important point. Last year, the festival was obviously shuttered because of the hurricane, much of the island.
Because the island was underwater.
Right. And so this year is really, really important for us. That's why we wanted to make it big and show that we're still here and that people are, you know, motivated and invigorated and really trying to make this something big.
Absolutely.
Well, with the talent you're talking about, this is going to be something different. It's going to ramp it up, as you were saying, something that you really need to go down and see.
Yes.
Spend the day.
And it's free.
Or come in the evening.
Free. Yes.
Yeah.
It's free. We're going to be partying from morning till night with Tiffany.
Tiffany.
And Jay Arsenault.
Jay Arsenault. I like that name.
Thank you.
Let's see.
Jay also has a really great music video online.
I do.
Where can they go see that?
Well, it's on YouTube. It's on the Houston Chronicle website. It'll soon be up on iTunes after a couple more weeks, hopefully. And you can also check out my album on iTunes as well.
Very cool.
Well, now, the expectation. What are y'all expecting? So when people are going down there, what can they expect?
They can expect...
we know about the talent, but what else? What else are they going to see?
What else?
I'm walking out. Well, I get out of my car. I park it, walk over to the Strand, and what's there?
You're going to see lots of fabulousness. You're going to see lots of vendor booths. You're going to see the Osito Foundation, which is one of our partners
Oh,
who distributes teddy bears to HIV and AIDS afflicted children. They're going to be with us at the Friday night party. They're going to be at Pride. And they're a really big part of why, you know, we're doing this and sort of amping it up to also give them a lot of visibility. So, I mean, it's really going to be a party. We're going to have stuff going on all day. We're going to have, I think, a motorcycle brigade drive up really early. Someone's going to sing the national anthem to kick us off. And then from that point on, it's going to be DJ music and then a performer and then breaks in between. Most of the artists are singing to tracks. Katie Malloy is singing with a full band.
Oh, wow.
So
wow,
that's
wow.
really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is there a website?
That's really cool.
There is a website. You can go to gayislander.com.
And that gives you information on the events and...
On all the events. We're also like on MySpace and Facebook and Twitter, all that good stuff.
You're all technologically... Yeah.
If you just jumped in, we're talking about Galveston Pride that's going on this weekend, Friday, and all day Saturday.
Yes.
If you were wondering what to do this weekend, we've got it for you.
Okay,
Galveston Pride.
Let's run down the events again starting Friday so we can drive out Friday afternoon. What's the Friday event?
Friday event kicks off at 5 p.m., and that is at Third Coast Beach Bar, which is just off the seawall.
It's seawall and 9th.
Yes.
Says the twit.
Yes, and we're going to have lots of performers. We're going to have our festival performers are going to be making appearances. We're going to have other performers, all kinds of good stuff. And that's free. Everything's okay. free. And that's from 5 until, you know, they kick us out.
Until you can't drive home and you got to crawl. Okay, and then you wake up Saturday.
Then you wake up Saturday.
You have brunch somewhere.
If you're lucky, you'll find a place to stay.
Exactly.
You go support the local economy and have brunch somewhere on the
road. Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Or breakfast.
And then you hit our festival at noon, and you see Jay Arsenault, you see Derek Barry, you see Katie Malloy, you see Tiffany. You also see AJ Cabrera, who was a Pride Idol winner in Houston this year.
Mm-hmm.
You see CeCe Ryder, Misty Valdez. You see... You know, all our vendor booths. You see me running around like a headless chicken.
This is a very
What will you be wearing?
That's been a source of contention. Oh. I don't know. I'm trying to decide. I may flip through a few outfits during the day.
You okay. have to be fabulous.
Right, you have to you be, just be fabulous.
You have to be the gayest one there.
I actually was gonna put some blue in my hair because I've had it before, but Jay has that down. So.
He stole your thunder.
Oh.
Well, he had it first. So.
Well, you can go with red.
Red's good.
Okay, so we're Saturday at 8 o'clock, and then after that...
Saturday at 8, the festival's done, and then everyone will head to the Pink Dolphin.
And where's that?
I think that's also on the Strand.
Yes, on the seawall.
Oh, on the seawall. That's right. So you got to go across the island.
Mm-hmm. And that starts at 9, and everyone that was involved with the festival is going to be there, you know, having a great time, celebrating, hopefully, the huge success that we've had during the day.
So come and enjoy it.
Yes.
And where do I get information again other than in the twit?
Yeah, you can go to gayislander.com.
And this is for Galveston Pride this weekend, beginning 5 o'clock Friday afternoon,
mm-hmm.
going through Saturday noon to 8,
yes.
and then after that an event at the Pink Dolphin.
Till
Sunday morning sometime, till you know, you have breakfast.
Until you find that special someone.
There you go.
There you go.
Oh, well, I'll come just for that. We're going to see, it'll be exciting. Anything else we missed? Real quickly.
Let's see. I think we're good. I think we covered it all.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Open your heart.
And once again, that was Jay Arsenault, the winner of the Houston Gay Idol Contest. And from his album, From the Ashes, and the title of that track was Shine. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levine.
And Jennifer Renee.
And we are continuing on our musical second hour with the Houston Pride Band.
Right. If you want something to do this weekend, we got it for you.
Yeah, this is, okay, this is an alternative. We were talking about Galveston Pride in the previous segment. Well, if you can't get to Galveston, there's something to do Saturday night.
Something very special to do Saturday night.
Something very special to do Saturday night. And in the studio, we have Senor Rudy Martinez.
Hello, everyone. How are y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Now, you're with the Pride Band, and you're the PR?
I am with marketing and PR, yes. Okay. I'm also clarinet player and all-around good guy.
Well, we know that. Well, at least that's what I've heard. So, there is a concert coming up.
Yeah, we have our first concert of the season, the 2009-2010 season, called Popra.
Popra.
Yeah.
Now, tell me how you came up with that name.
Well, our artistic director, Jason Stevens, came up with that name. It's basically a fusion of pop and opera, so we're going to take our listeners, our audience members, to the theater as well as to the opera.
Take me there, yes.
Yeah. That's good. So we're going to have some pieces from Carmen.
Oh,
Yeah, from Phantom of the Opera, of course.
Oh, yes.
Can't have a gay night out without Andrew Lloyd Webber. Yeah.
Very good. So pop and opera, so therefore Popra.
Popra. Isn't that fantastic? That's just a wonderful name.
It is, and it works. Okay, so when and where?
All right, it's going to be this Saturday, the 24th, and it is at 7:30 at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church. That's at the corner of
11th and T.C. Chester.
It sure is.
You know, the big old church next to the ditch. I mean, the bayou.
The big ditch.
The big ditch.
The church on the ditch. We can't mention ticket prices, but where can one get tickets?
You can either go online at www.houstonprideband.org, or you can call 713-862-9491. Lastly, you can certainly get them at the door.
Very good.
Well, one of the things is that y'all don't do this just for fun, which it is, and entertainment for those around there. You also benefit different organizations.
That is
and
correct.
And what's the organization going to benefit this time?
This time around, we're benefiting the Bayou City Performing Arts and their whole association of choruses. You know, Gay Men's Chorus, the Bayou City Women's Chorus.
What a natural kind of symbiosis.
Exactly, and that's kind of how we're describing it this time around, as a symbiosis with performing arts.
Now, is this usually a benefit concert? Do you usually do benefits at your club?
Yeah, we usually have a beneficiary each concert. Oh. We've had AIDS Walk Houston. We've had the Lesbian Health Initiative, Assisters, and other such associations like that.
Very good. So it's not only a good time, but it's for a good cause.
Exactly. So if you're a big supporter of not only the Houston Pride Band, but also BCPA, come on out and listen and support both organizations.
Well, now, how long has the band been in existence?
30-plus years. We actually celebrated 30 years back just a couple of seasons ago.
And
they were on, don't you remember? We interviewed them.
I know that, but there are people out there that may not remember, and I would always like to go start back with square one. Also, if I wanted to be part of the band, what's it take?
We have no auditions. It's haven't played for a while, like myself, I didn't play for 18 years since graduating high school, hadn't picked up a clarinet, came and saw the Houston Pride Band, joined them at one of the rehearsals, and as I was learning how to play again, basically that's all you need to do. Just come in and either contact us via email at info@houstonprideband.org, or you can call us again at 713-862-9491, or you can come by and watch us rehearse. And if you like what you see, come and join us.
Now, when do y'all rehearse?
We rehearse on Wednesdays. We are actually moving rehearsal space to going to be at Bethel UCC, which is at the corner of Shepherd and Washington.
Shepherd and Washington. I know where that is. That's, by the El Rey Taqueria, kind of.
And actually, if you are familiar with Mardi Gras, it shares the same parking lot.
Oh, okay. I know exactly where that is.
All right. If I wanted to be part of the band, what's the commitment I've got to?
Well,
what would I have to commit to?
Basically, one night a week,
Okay.
For 2 hours, 7:30 to 9:30.
All right.
And then we do 3 concerts a year.
A year. And you do those concerts, obviously, this first one, but when are the other two?
The other two are going to fall in March, if I'm not mistaken, March, and then also in June.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're pretty far apart, spread apart. And then we also do a free concert in the park at Discovery Green, which is something we started last year, and they've invited us back.
Oh, that's good. Wonderful. Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
It's a free concert. And we also march in the Houston Pride Parade.
And you always see y'all at AIDS Walk.
Yeah, that's right. We're always performing at AIDS Walk. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I always like to stop and listen when I'm walking.
But the main thing, I've got to commit to the rehearsals, which is once a week.
Right.
It is once a week.
Once a week.
All right. And then whatever instrument I can play. What if I played an instrument and I don't have it anymore?
Well, you may want to check with us because we do have some instruments in our storage.
So don't let that stop you.
Exactly. We may have the instrument that, that you don't have.
And what if I have absolutely no talent? How can I be of service?
Well, you can certainly volunteer for the concerts or volunteer during the Pride Parade. We actually had a member who was familiar with playing the clarinet and joined and moved into the larger bass clarinet and learned as he was playing, which is a great thing because the only true way you're going to learn is by actually playing.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes playing at home in an apartment complex isn't the best thing.
Tell me about it.
Now, we're talking to...
Especially drums.
We're talking to Rudy Martinez of the Houston Pride Band, and we're talking about the upcoming concert this Saturday at 7:30 at the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church, which is located at 11th Street and T.C. Jester.
And it will be benefiting...
Bayou City Performing Arts.
Mm.
And it is entitled Popra.
Popra.
And I'm excited about the Star Wars.
Yes, many people may not realize, but Star Wars was written as kind of a space opera.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a...
That's very challenging music.
Yeah, all-out Star Wars. It is very challenging. So
yeah.
Our last piece, and it blows the audience away. I know it will. Just came back from rehearsal today because we're having a special Monday rehearsal, and I'm stoked about this whole concert because it's going to be some really good music. I really encourage your listeners to come out and...
Now, when you say Star Wars, now, is it... We instantly think of the movie, so is it a lot of that music? That's what it is.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty challenging. John Williams is really tough on his musicians. Of course, he has, you know, like the London Symphony or something.
Exactly, and a nice recording studio.
But I'm sure that the Pride Band will do a great job.
Oh, yeah, it was blowing me away. Let's put it that way. It was wonderful. So I'm really, really excited about this concert.
Well, it's the kind of challenge that a musician likes to take on.
Yeah, and that's a whole new level that our artistic director, Jason Stevens, has taken us to.
Now, tell us about being in the band. Do y'all do, like, socials, and do y'all get together outside of performing and rehearsing?
Definitely. Actually, the whole experience of being in the Houston Pride Band is a very social event. Once we have rehearsals, I mean, and the rehearsals themselves are the opportunity to mingle and camaraderie and such, and then afterwards, going out for something to eat, a couple of drinks, if you will.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... Anytime we have a concert afterwards, we usually have a social with some of our guests, our listeners, and our attendees that we enjoy providing some refreshments for them.
Very good. And you have, I have to give a shout out to Noel Freeman, who's a good friend of mine.
Yes, actually, Noel was a trombone player. He actually still is, quote unquote. And when
he's busy with something else, isn't he? Now,
yes, he is.
Is he a good trombone player?
Yeah, actually, he is.
See, this is
great. Noel, you're a great trombone player.
See, I play trombone, so this is kind of intimidating to me.
Oh,
yeah,
please.
You know, I've been trying to get Brian.
Are you?
To,
what, have you gone to audition for the band?
I haven't even picked up a trombone in 15 years.
Well, so did somebody in the clarinet. There's nothing holding you back. That's the whole idea that anyone out there in our community who's interested in playing that instrument that they probably learned in school.
You know, ever since I've started doing these spots on the radio with Brian, I've tried to convince him. So I'm just going to use reverse psychology. Brian, we don't need you.
Oh, gosh. That works on me. No, the thing is, you know...
The thing is, even if you... don't play. There's plenty of opportunities for volunteerism.
I get in trouble with volunteering and doing activities, and my husband's like, I'm going to divorce you if you go to more meetings. Or
does he play a musical instrument?
No, he's vocal. So he's not. He doesn't understand.
But he can volunteer.
Well, he could. See? He's not the kind of the hard instrumental band queer, air quotes, as I am and as I was. I was almost all state, so I'm kind of, I miss it.
Show tunes, right?
Oh, I'm all about show tunes and music, and I love that.
Well, song. Now, wouldn't it have been wonderful if you joined the band and your partner had joined the gay men's chorus? And then now you would have a concert that would benefit his group.
There you go.
That's right.
Missed opportunities.
Well, we'll just have to think about that one in the future. We challenge you, Brian.
I accept the challenge. And you know what? I challenge people out listening in the audience to get involved and become active with
Well,
the
it's
Pride
important Day. That they get involved. And this is an outlet. Many of us have skills and talents that we maybe learned a musical instrument in high school or college, and we've laid it aside. But, you know, we enjoyed it at one time, and this gives us an opportunity to, again, enjoy the thrill of performing with other people and for a good cause.
Exactly. And the beauty of it is we have all caliber of players. We have some who play in other organizations, and then we have some who have not picked up the horn for 18, 20 years, and they begin playing again, and they slowly get back into it, and we accept everybody and all.
Now, when I hear band, you know, I think immediately of, you know, the high school band, the marching band. But y'all play very serious symphony-type music, too.
Correct.
And so it's not just a band, it's more of an orchestra as well.
Well, and the main difference between a wind band is what we're considered a wind band versus an orchestra, or it's just the omission of strings.
So tell us what instruments that y'all have and that people may in the audience may play and may be able to come and participate.
Certainly. Flutes, piccolo, we got oboe, we got English horn, we've got bassoon. Those are your double reach right there. You got your clarinets, your bass clarinets, your contrabass clarinets, you got your saxophones, tenor saxophones, tubas, trombones, euphoniums, trumpets, drums, you know, percussion.
How many members are in the band?
Play the cymbal.
The finger cymbals.
How many members do you have?
And you can dance. No.
And you can dance.
How many do y'all have?
About 30.
30, okay.
30 plus.
Very good.
And always looking for new people.
Always looking for new people. All levels. We accept all levels. Please keep that in mind. Don't let your having not played for a few years, many years, in fact, keep you from coming around and taking a look at us and deciding to come join us.
Coming and enjoying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's always a place for someone in the band.
You know, and I always say that, you know, be active in your community. Do something. And if you're musical, get involved with the Houston Pride Band or, you know, the BCPA or, you know, any of the other beneficiaries from your concerts or just, you know, get active. And that's what makes our community strong and diverse and a wonderful place to live.
Well, the opportunity to perform your instrument that you may have learned or to learn an instrument.
And you know
which is also a challenge. You may have said, God, I wish I had learned to play the trumpet or the French horn. This gives you a chance to do so.
And also a way to meet people and expand your circle. You never know. You might meet your future husband in the Pride Band.
People or wife.
What? I'm sorry.
I mean,
I'm very male-centric.
I know. You're male-centric. You know, trannies are welcome, aren't we?
Exactly.
See?
Yes.
And then bisexuals, they're welcome.
You may meet your future partner.
Very good, Brian.
Yes.
And you have to realize, too, that bandies are very, very attractive to other people.
They are.
That's right. Well, I know you'll be spending some time with people of a mutual interest.
Exactly.
A love of music and a mutual
passion.
Yes.
Yes.
Music. A love of music and passion. Again, where is this going to be?
It's going to be at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church at the corner of West TC and 11th Street.
And so we talked about briefly the next two that you're going to have. Mm-hmm. Do you have any information on them?
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, I don't have the dates down, but the next concert is going to be called Flights of Fancy.
Okay. Flights of Fancy,
ooh,
yeah.
That sounds good. What's going to be? What's... Well, just, get, you know, the Pride Band sort of gives it away.
I know, but Flights of Fancy, that just sounds...
At the pinpoint, the music that we're going to actually be playing, I really can't recall which pieces we're playing per concert, but then the concert after that, which we're hoping to hold at Hobby Center, again, Zilka Hall.
Is this like the Pride concert?
Close to Pride, yes.
Yeah.
June one.
Yeah, we try to do a kickoff kind of Pride thing, but I think this year it's going to be actually a Sunday matinee.
Really?
That would be good.
Yeah.
Well,
that is good.
Yeah.
That's very good.
And it's called No Strings Attached.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. How nice. How nice.
And for your listeners who may know, we're going to be playing the Eastern Overture, if I'm not mistaken. I apologize, Jason, if I got that wrong.
I'm sure Jason will
some very, very great pieces.
All right, well, we're talking to Rudy Martinez of the Houston Pride Band, and if you have nothing to do this weekend, then take
it. Wait a second. They probably have lots to do, but take the time to be part of our community and go see the performance of the Pride Band.
Absolutely, and it's a wonderful concert. It's 7:30 at the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church in the Heights, 11th and T.C. Jester.
Yeah, we're all busy. We all have things to do, but, you know, take out a little time and enjoyment. Take your partner or a friend or a lot of friends and come see the performance. Listen to the music.
Yes, and the website is HoustonPrideBand.org, and you can get tickets there or at the door.
Take this as your first opportunity to come out and see what the Houston Pride Band's about.
Absolutely. And if you are a fan of Star Wars and also Carmen, which would be a rather unique combination, you're there to do it.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Rudy. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Thank you very much for having me on, and thank you, listeners, for their support.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see you Saturday.
Great. Right. Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
And we have an announcement here. The Avondale Association cordially invites you and your guests to support a fundraiser which benefits the Houston Buyers Club. Now, the Houston Buyers Club was started 12 years ago to help people with chronic health conditions to gain access to affordable or free nutritional supplements. That is the biggest part of their program. They also do Ellen's Hand, which is a program which solicits vitamin donations from manufacturers, nutritional counseling, educational events, and Health Talks Houston. So there's a fundraiser coming up this week, as if there isn't enough going on already, held by the Avondale Association, and they are inviting you to Pictures Plus Gallery, and that's this coming Thursday, October 22nd at 6:30 p.m. The fundraiser runs from 6:30 to 9 p.m., and they have food and beverages complimentary, so, you know, you've got me at food. And that's, again, at Pictures Plus Gallery, 115 Hyde Park Boulevard in the Montrose, 6:30 p.m. Thursday. And the Houston Buyers Club is the beneficiary of this. It's a Pictures and More is a pictures company, and this is going to be a display of pictures and art. And there's also going to be some music, and donations are going to be welcomed. And the whole thing, again, is a fundraiser for the Houston Buyers Club, and it's going to be at Pictures Plus Gallery on Hyde Park Boulevard Thursday, October 22nd, starting at 6:30 p.m. This is Queer Voices.
Full equality in the land of the free, nearly a quarter of a million LGBT activists and their supporters marched on the home of their federal government October 11th. Organizing for the National Equality March was fueled by impatience with the Obama administration, and it was galvanized by state-level battles like the Prop 8 loss in California and the upcoming ballot measures in Maine and Washington. Religious right groups have, as usual, been deeply involved in opposing LGBTs on all those issues. So it was interesting to see queer supportive communities of faith take the stage ahead of any other rally speakers.
Please welcome to the stage founder of the Metropolitan Community Churches, Reverend Troy Terry. Reverend Terry is joined by Metropolitan Community Church's presiding bishop and moderator, Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson, Unitarian Universalist Association President, Reverend Peter Morales, President of the Board of Rabbis of Southern California, Rabbi Denise Ager, Cambridge Welcoming Ministries of the United Methodist Church, Reverend Dr. Tiffany Steinhardt, the Radical Fairies TIF, Integrity, Vice President for National Affairs, Neil Houghton, Theravada Buddhist,
Reverend Darlene Nipper, Pagan Tradition Reverend Donna Cara Lee, and Dignity USA Executive Director Marianne Duddy Burke.
I have a letter I want to read to you from a friend of ours. I regret that I'm unable to be with you in person today, but it gives me great joy to add my voice in support of the goals of the National Equality March and to bring greetings to the attendees who have gathered in Washington, D.C. on October the 11th, 2009 to further the important work of justice. Your goal is noble and important one, and one deserving the support of all people of goodwill. Equal protection for gays, lesbians, bi, transgender people in all matters governed by civil laws in 50 states. It is my prayer that your voices will be heard today in the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. White House, and that those in positions of civil authority will respond by advancing equality under the law for LGBT people. This must be the duty of every democracy. Finally, I would remind you that the vital work of the National Equality March does not end at today's events. That is rather a beginning. I encourage each of you to return to your cities and towns and villages with a renewed commitment to work for justice and equality among your friends and on your jobs and in your communities. In that way, you will together transform your nation. With my warm best wishes for every success, we'll respond by advancing equality along under the LGBT for AT people. This must be beauty of every democracy. Finally, I would remind you that the vital work of the National Equality March does not end at today's event. That is rather a beginning. I encourage you to return you to your cities and towns and villages with a commitment to work for justice and equality among your friends and on your jobs and in your communities. Now, in you way, you will together transform your nation with my warm wish best for every success. We'll respond by singing vanity of law under the LGBT for AT people. This beauty of every democracy. Finally, I remind you that the vital work of the National Equality does not fit to dot in. Today's event. That is that rather a beginning. I each of you courage eternity you to your city and towns and villages with a commitment to work for justice and equality among your friends and on your jobs and in your communities. In you way you will travel together for your nation with my warm wish best for every success. Respond by singing vanity of all qualities under the GB for my people. This beauty of the MRK, the every democracy. Finally, I remind you that the vital work of the National Equality does not emit to March. Today's audience is event rather than a beginning. Each of you her return to your city and towns and villages with a renewed commitment to work for justice, quality, and among the your friends and on your jobs and in your unity. Now, communities, in way will travel together to your nation with my firm wish a warm best for every just for six to respond to everything by
the land of the free.
Full equality in the land of the free, nearly a quarter of a million LGBT activists and their supporters marched on the home of their federal government October 11th. Organizing for the National Equality March was fueled by impatience with the Obama administration, and it was galvanized by state-level battles like the Prop 8 laws in California and the upcoming ballot measures in Maine and Washington. Religious right groups have, as usual, been deeply involved in opposing LGBTs on all those issues, So it was interesting to see queer supportive communities of faith take the stage ahead of any other rally speakers.
Please welcome to the stage founder of the Metropolitan Community Churches, Reverend Troy Terry. Reverend Terry is joined by Metropolitan Community Church's presiding bishop and moderator, Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson, Unitarian Universalist Association President, Reverend Peter Morales, President of the Board of Rabbis of Southern California, Rabbi Denise Ager, Cambridge Welcoming Ministries of the United Methodist Church, Reverend Dr. Tiffany Steinhardt, the Radical Fairies TIF, Integrity, Vice President for National Affairs, Neil Houghton, Theravada Buddhist, Reverend Darlene Nipper, Pagan Tradition, Reverend Donna Cara Lee, and Dignity USA Executive Director, Marianne Duddy Burke.
I have a letter I want to read to you from a friend of ours. I regret that I'm unable to be with you in person today, but it gives me great joy to add my voice in support of the goals of the National Equality March and to bring greetings to the attendees who have gathered in Washington, D.C. on October the 11th, 2009, to further the important work of justice. Your goal is noble and important one, and one deserving the support of all people of goodwill. Equal protection for gays, lesbians, bi, transgendered people in all matters governed by civil laws in 50 states. It is my prayer that your voices will be heard today in the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. White House, and that those in positions of civil authority will respond by advancing equality under the law for LGBT people. This must be the duty of every democracy. Finally, I would remind you that the vital work of the National Equality March does not end at today's events. That is rather a beginning. I encourage each of you to return to your cities and towns and villages with a renewed commitment to work for justice and equality among your friends and on your jobs and in your communities. In that way, you will together transform your nation. With my warm best wishes for every success, I will respond by advancing equality along under the LGBT for AT people. This must be the democracy. Finally, I would remind you that the vital work of the National Equality March does not end at today's event. That is rather a beginning. I encourage you to return to your cities and towns and villages with a renewed commitment to work for justice and equality among your friends and on your jobs and in your communities. Now, in you will together transform your nation with my warm wish best for every success. Will respond by singing vitality.
Well, unfortunately, it looks like This Way Out's feature segments are going to be unplayable. They had some technical difficulties today, and I guess that extended right into getting the thing finished and uploaded. So, in its place, here is some queer music heritage music.
Dark and dim must be the way. for you. A cat.
Hello?
Eric Hyman with a song called Bartender from his album One Night Stands, talking about dating bartenders and bar folks and all that kind of stuff. And,
like you.
Well, that was certainly my experience when I was a disco tea buffy back in my early days, yes.
Last week?
Oh, right, exactly.
No, more than likely when they had dial telephones. I mean,
exactly, yeah, I'm doing
what's
well.
What's on the wall where you crank the
phone? Hey. I'm doing well just to be able to remember those days. Okay.
Are we all?
Well.
Yes, we're... What?
So, yes. you have some
well,
stuff.
Well, early voting started today, and it goes through a week from Friday.
Yeah, what are
through
we voting
Halloween.
For?
So, you know, you can study the issues and decide who you want to vote for, but it's really important that you go out and vote. You can vote from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. through Friday. Saturday is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday is 1 to 6 p.m. And next Monday through Friday is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. The nice thing about early voting, if you live in Harris County, you can vote in any one of the 36, 37 different locations. You can find that out at harrisvotes.org. If you want to know some more about the candidates, you can go to the caucus.org or the League of Women's Voters. Just do the Google search, and they have an excellent guide.
We always vote at the West Grady Metropolitan Center.
Well, it's just important you get out and vote. The predictions are it's going to be a low turnout. So your vote will actually have the power of maybe 5 or 10 times what it is.
And this is an important election. We won't talk about exactly what, but it could be very historic.
Well, we're voting on a new mayor, which in most cases will be for 6 years, you know, 3 terms when they're term limited out. So it's important to get out and vote. Plus a lot of other, the council, but there's also some amendments to the state constitution that are on there.
I haven't even studied them. There's like 11.
There's 11 of them. Yeah. So there's a lot going on. There's the HISD Board of Trustees is being voted on. So most people may even not even know what district they're in.
Absolutely. And you want to get out early so you can avoid the lines.
Okay. And it's convenient. And for those of you who haven't been really paying attention, you can vote on Saturday and Sunday. If you go to church, after church, go vote.
Saturday or Sunday.
Yes. Yeah, you get to vote
or
once.
Yeah, vote often and early.
I wanted to talk about the things we didn't get to talk about on the show tonight. Was the Houston Women's Festival.
Yeah, coming up this weekend.
It's the 15th year. It's at Jones Plaza, and there's several performances by various artists. And I direct you to the website, which is HWHoustonWomen'sFestival.org. Again, that's HWFestival.org. And that's on Saturday at Jones Plaza.
And, of course, there's lots of other events going on, and you can find out that information through various sources. But I thought it was very interesting, the Galveston Pride.
Yeah, please go down to the island and help rebuild after Ike, and also be proud and wear your beads and all your gay pride apparel.
Well, support gay pride down in Galveston because, they got beat up last time because of the storm. Now they're putting things back together. And so support your community.
Who else did we have on the show, Jennifer?
We had Melissa Noriega, who is city council member at Large 3, and want to thank her for coming on and talking about the city and public safety.
And it should be noted that she does not have a single opponent for this.
No, she didn't. She's doing a good job.
And we also had Sally Helfer from the Montrose Counseling Center.
Yes. And Colt Meyer was here talking about transgender support group there on Monday nights.
And at the 10 o'clock hour, we had Galveston Pride with Joey Guerra.
Yes.
And Jay Arsenault, performer at Galveston
Pride.
He'll
be performing down there on the Strand.
And Tiffany's going to be there, too.
Yes. And then we had the Pride Band.
That was Rudy Martinez.
And if you missed part of the show, you can pick it up tomorrow on iTunes.
Which is very convenient.
Yes. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
There are places you go to get the quick news.
You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than just the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touches our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations.
You need a choice. And that's why you tune to community radio. Because you have to know more.
People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored,
commercial-free,
Pacifica Radio,
KPFT, Houston.
Picture yourself driving home listening to a great story or a song or a discussion.
Suddenly, you find yourself parked, but rather than turn the radio off, you stay in your car to hear what you're listening to the end.
That's called a driveway moment.
A driveway moment?
Yes, it's that moment that you just can't get out of the car because what you're hearing is just that good.
Then hey, what better place to support KPFT?
KPFT features music, news, and talk that is so compelling people will do anything to hear the end of it. If you're in your car right now and have your cell phone with you, as soon as you pull in, give a call to our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314.
Give me that number again.
713-526-4000.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.